Good morning. As always, it is a joy to travel north and meet and worship with y'all. I was going to add one thing to the thankfulness. I'm thankful that God transcends boundaries. It's not just the God of Myerstown. It is the God of the world. He is the God of the world. And coming up here, we serve the same God. That brings me joy to come up and worship with brothers and sisters. So thank you for being here this morning. It is a joy to be here with my family and three little girls. I'd like to tell you a story about Theodore. Theodore was a young boy who grew up in a Sparta community many, many years ago. As Theodore grew up, he had a mom who cared for him well. He also knew he had a dad and an older brother. As he grew up, though, at the age of 2 and 3, they said he had a dad, and he knew it, but he did not see his dad, because his dad was off somewhere fulfilling his life purpose, they said. One day, the community got word that Theodore's dad was returning to town. The community planned a big celebration. They were going to celebrate his return. So as they lined the streets, and as Theodore's dad came down the main street, Theodore's dad held a shield similar to that high above his head. The crowds cheered and celebrated. He had returned victorious. He was saving their community. He was victorious. And they celebrated well. The night moved on, the years went on, and Theodore knew he had an older brother, Anders, as well. But again, Anders wasn't around. They got word that he was returning. Theodore got excited. Again, they were going to celebrate. He got to see his brother, who he heard about but never saw. As again, the community gathered, they lined the streets. In anticipation, Theodore leaned way out into the street to catch a glimpse of his brother. As his brother Anders entered the streets, he saw a sight he wasn't ready for. Instead of Anders holding the shield high above his head, the shield was holding the body of his brother Anders. The people cheered. They celebrated all evening long. Theodore was confused. He was mortified. He pulled dad and mom aside and he said, "Why are people celebrating? My brother died." They looked at him perplexed. He said, "Theodore, he fulfilled his life purpose. He protected our community. We're celebrating that." Theodore took these things in his head and pondered. As he grew older, at the age of 5, he remembered what his brother and his dad and how they had been celebrating. He aspired to be the same. Let's fast forward to his 7th birthday party. Again, the community gathered. They knew how to celebrate well. They knew how to throw a party. So again, they threw a birthday party for Theodore this time. Theodore was excited. At the end of the party, his mother disappeared for a little bit and returned and presented to him a shield and said these words, "Return with this shield or on it." His mother turned and walked away. And that's the last words that Theodore heard from his mother. The next day, he went off to boot camp at the age of 7 to become a soldier. To be like his dad. To be like his big brother. You see, the sole focus, the vision of this community in Sparta was this. They wanted their young men to be soldiers, to protect their community. And that's what the men lived for. That's how they educated. That's how they spoke into the lives of these young boys. They wanted this picture in their head. What amazes me about this story of this Spartan community is not that soldiers were their picture. As I think about what I want my children to vision and picture, it's not really this. Well, you could maybe argue the spiritual armor, so yes, there should be a soldier. But I don't think I want my children, I know I don't want my children to grow up with a vision of war and protection.
But rather, what amazes me about this story is that this community strongly believed in what the outcome they wanted. Therefore, they trained and gave everything they had to get that outcome. There's an African proverb that says, it takes a village to raise a child.
You may have heard that phrase before.
It comes back from an African community. And what they believed is that it was not just the family, but it was the whole community who bought into the picture of what they wanted their children to become. And it was not just the family, but it was the whole community, the church,
to bring their children to where they wanted. That's what amazes me about the story in Sparta. And the families sacrificed their men for the cause because they believed in it. So I pose this morning, what's our mantra? Or what's our vision for our children? What do we want our children to become?
So let me invite your participation a little bit. What is the most important thing in life? What do you want your children to remember? Go ahead, give me some answers. And we could spend a long time with this, so there's not a long answer.
Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength.
Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and strength. What else?
God the example.
God the example.
Laying down your life for Jesus.
Seek justice, love mercy, and come to the Lord God.
What else?
We could spend some time thinking about that and talking about several answers. Riley, do you know where that verse comes from?
Anybody know? Actually, I think there's a couple places where it's referred to.
Deuteronomy
6, that's right. Where did Jesus say it? Matthew 22. You go to Matthew 22, and it says that exact same thing. And the Pharisees tried to trap him. They came to him and said, Jesus, which one's the most important? Out of our 600 and some laws, which one's the most important? Because the Pharisees were there, the Sadducees were there, and they all had their different beliefs. Which one was the most important? So they wanted to trap Jesus. And Jesus responds, and he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second,
love your neighbor as yourself.
Love your neighbor as yourself. On this hangs all the law and the prophets. See some of the Pharisees. Quit. You're missing the point. All those laws just hang on loving God and loving others. I think this morning that we could all agree, and the premise I come from this morning, is that the most important thing is that our children love God. And out of that love for God, they live a life of service to others. That's loving your neighbor as yourself. So can we agree on the premise this morning that the most important thing, what we want our children to picture, is a love for God. And out of that love for God comes a service for others. So we love God by serving others.
That's my thesis this morning. So, if that's the most important thing, how do we get there? Should we send our children off to boot camp at age 7?
Teach them to love God. Send them away from the family. That's how the Spartans did it. We should have school 24/7. Right, Cody?
One of the most common questions I get in school, I should ask Dawson this. What's the most common question you get in school?
Mr. Weaver, why do I need to learn this? When am I going to use this in my job?
You know, good teachers like brain spinning here.
Well, Johnny, if you're ever a farmer, you're going to need to use this formula to calculate the feed that you give your cows.
Johnny,
I'm never going to be a farmer. And teacher's wheels start spinning.
What is hidden behind that question?
How is this going to benefit me? Right? If I'm not going to use it later in life, there's no reason. That's the heart. That's what I hear behind the question.
So, I pose this morning, What would you say if you were the teacher and Johnny asks, why am I learning this? What would you say? What's the purpose of school? My title this morning is Why School? And I think I asked for some help in calculating the number of children here at Shenandoah, but I think it is over 35 children under the age of 18.
35 children! That's more than the adults!
I think we would do well to invest significant energy and thought into what we want those 35 children to become. That's why I think we grapple with this. They're the next leaders of our church. They're the next moms. They're the next dads. Where are you investing your time? Parents. Adults. So, my question, how do we learn this? If our goal is for them to love God and serve others, what training do they need? What education do they need? Do we quote it every Sunday? Maybe we should quote that Bible verse every Sunday. You know, the Spartans, they believed it. And they said it and they did it in all areas of life. They sacrificed, families sacrificed tremendously for the outcome of soldiers in that case. So if our goal is men and women who love God by serving others, how do we get there? We need to educate them, and school plays a big part. So yes, we're going to talk about school this morning. And the sad thing is, I might have lost some of you already. I don't have children, or maybe some of you had a bad experience in school. And that breaks my heart. And that sometimes is the case. So come with me a little bit. We're going to look at what God says about school. We're going to look at the history. So any historians, get ready. We're going to go really fast. And I won't give you a test at the end, I promise. And so we're going to look at what God says, what people have done. Then we're going to look at where I see schools today, education today. And then I'm going to give a little vision forward of where we can go. And some practical tips of how we can invest in our children. So, first of all, what does God say? In Genesis 18:19, it's speaking of Abraham. And it says, he commanded his children that they keep the way of the Lord. He pointed Abraham out and he says, Abraham's my man. Because he ordered his life, his household in a way that his children would keep the commandments of the Lord. That's what Abraham's focus was. So God pulled Abraham out here. He's like, he's an example. He's a model. So go back. Look what Abraham did. Proverbs 29:15 says, a child left to himself brings what? Shame.
Children need to be trained. They need to be guided. Intentional effort needs to be put into that.
Else they're going to bring shame. Ephesians 6:4 says, provoke not your children to wrath, but rather instruction and discipline. They need to be instructed. They need to be discipled. Sometimes looking at our children, we scratch our heads and maybe pull out our hair. Are we getting anywhere? But you know what? Be consistent.
Senorita Sharon, you remember back in Spanish class? I think I had you as a Spanish teacher. I hope I matured a little bit since then. She might have pulled her hair out when she was working with me back then. You see, I needed to be nurtured. I needed to grow and be discipled and instructed. That's what God is saying. He cares about it.
And Proverbs 22:6 says, train a child and he will not depart from it. And this, I think, is so important. The first years of a child's life are the most influential on where they will come out. So parents, dig in when they're young. Have their hearts when they're young. That will set them up for success later on. So those are just a couple verses at what God says. God cares about instruction and discipleship. And we could spend all morning looking at that, but we're not going to take the time to do that. So that's what God said. He cares about it. Now, let's look at what people have done. First of all, the Spartans. I said at the age of 7, they sent their boys off. They educated with the sole purpose of them becoming soldiers. Kind of for the state, or the good of the community, the protection of the village. The mothers were just kind of the state nurse. You know, they raised the children to 7, and then they were shipped off to boot camp. And that's where they were trained to be prepared to fight. So the Spartans, that was their picture. They wanted that outcome. Athens is very similar to that. At the age of 7, again, they would send them off. Now, if we move ahead to the Roman Empire, They got the idea of education as, you know what, we need to bring some organization to this. We can't haphazardly train our children. So they set in place elementary school, secondary school, and colleges. Ring a bell. Similar structure is still in existence today. So the Roman Empire was focused on structure. That is how they educated. And that is symbolized by the desk in a nice row. By the way, back in the Sparta and the Athens era, they believed that you should go to school at dawn. So as soon as the sun comes up, you go to school. And as the sun sets, you go home. So students, tomorrow, as soon as the sun comes up, off to school. And you're going to be there until the sun sets. Deal? No. Come along to the Roman Empire. They said, you know what? That's a little too long for children to be at school. So they said, look, they don't need to be at school all the daylight hours. So that's the Roman Empire. They wanted organized school structure. Therefore, they set up their schools in that way. Move on to the Jewish schools. The Jews, what did they want? They wanted their men to be taught in the 600 and some laws of the law. Therefore, they got respectable men of their community, and they got big textbooks, and they dug into the law. And that's what they wanted as an outcome of their education. That's what the Jews did. Respectable teachers, school. They went back to school starting at sunrise again. And the Old Testament was the core of their curriculum. That's how they taught. That's the outcome they wanted. So we're seeing that people groups wanted specific outcomes. Therefore, they sacrificed. They taught in that way. Let's move ahead to the Catholics. The Catholics' mantra was, keep out the heretics. So to keep out the heretics, they said, you know what? Let's not teach the people. We are only going to teach the priests. The priests are the elite. And they will read the Bible in Latin to the laymen. The laymen don't need to know anything. Let's keep out the heretics. We don't want any heretics arising. Let's not train them so they don't know any better. You only did school if you didn't have a real job. That was something that came out in this time. So, as a result of this, do you know what happened? Did you ever hear of the Crusades? So now we have the priests and the leaders of the Catholics saying, we need our land back. Let's go get it back. And we have thousands of people traveling thousands of miles to claim their land back. It was so bad that they had a children's crusade where they sent thousands of children miles to their death. Because they wanted to educate in a way that nobody knew. You just did what the priest said. That's how the Catholics did in this era. Then we enter the 1000s, and we have the classical education, which they wanted to educate as a big purpose. They made reason and faith blend together. And education, training children, was in a sorry state at this time. And then we have the Moravians, the Hussites, Waldensians was another group that came along, John Wycliffe, John Huss. They said, everybody should read and write. And read what? The Bible. They believed, and they actually underwent much persecution. Go back to the Waldensians and that era. They were persecuted because they did not send their children to the public school, per se. They wanted to train them in the way they wanted, so that they could read the Bible on their own. That's what they believed, and they started producing Bibles at this time for everybody. So they had to sacrifice deeply for the outcome of their children to be able to read the Bible. Again, we're looking back in history to see what people did and to see what they sacrificed for their end results. Then we move on to the Reformation era. Martin Luther was a champion of a Christian education. And Martin Luther is an interesting man. And here's what he quoted about schools. Listen, when schools prosper, the church remains righteous and her doctrine pure. Young pupils and students are the seed and source of the church. If we were dead, whence would come our successors? If not from the schools, for the sake of the church, we must have and maintain Christian schools. That was back in the 1500s. Martin Luther says, whoa, we can't have this public education system. We need Christian schools that are educating our children how we want. Bible-centered education came out of this, short school days, music, discipline with love, older people should teach were all some things that came out of this Reformation era. But he struggled with something. This new type of schooling took sacrifice and cost money. And he struggled to get the parents to buy in. The parents said, no, it costs me money. I got to sacrifice. So you know where he went? He went to the government. And in the 1500s, we have the public schools started.
Interesting. That was the Reformation era. So now we have the government running the schools. What outcome do you think the government wants for our children? Okay, this is back in the 1500s. Because of this, we have the Pilgrims and Puritans. And what did they do? They gave up their life. They got on a ship. Many of them died to cross the seas. Why? I often think the Pilgrims and Puritans came for religious freedom, and I agree. I think they came with the sole purpose of religious freedom to educate their children in the way they wanted. Look back, read the stories as they made the decisions to travel across the sea. Over here in America, they had the freedom to do that. The first schools were started. They had no grades. Oh, imagine that, Cody. No grades. Yeah. Huh. I'm not sure. Teachers were paid poorly, but they were respected. There was a shift.
As the Pilgrims and Puritans settled into the New World, instead of the original goal of Bible-based curriculum, it moved to vocational-based. What's a vocation? Yeah. So instead of starting to train children to read the Bible and understand the Bible, they shifted that to train children to do their jobs.
I'm just saying this is what people have done, Pilgrims and Puritans. And then we have the 1800s. The Mennonites were attracted to PA specifically because of the religious freedom and education that they had. They believed the authority of school came from the church. They were the first to organize schools. If you want a hero to look back at, look at Christopher Dock. Instrumental man, he was found dead praying for his students. He was a man who gave his life to education. There was an overseer of school at this time that says, use your mind, not with the selfish reasons, but to serve God and others. In the 1850s, we have the public schools starting. The McGuffey Reader came along, and there was an excess of money. And the government said, you know what, we need to start some schools for our children. So the U.S. government started creating schools, starting schools. Great. As the Mennonites were looking on, they saw the public education system starting. There was good morals back in the 1850s. So there was some good schooling that was happening. Another big thing was it was free. I no longer have to pay. I can send my children to public school. And they're learning, it's free. There was actually a lot of Mennonites involved in the public school system in the 1800s. Very interesting. And has stayed this way to the present. The public school system is still going. And that is what we had back in the one-room schoolhouses. Students in a row, a teacher teaching a group of students. As the Anabaptists came along, I said they joined, the Mennonites and Anabaptists joined the public school system. And in the 1800s, it was a good time. As soon as the 1900s came along, though, the morals declined rapidly. And they started seeing the effect it was having on their students, and they said, whoa, we need to have our own schools run by the churches. And so they worked hard to start their own schools. But the public school system fought back, the government fought back. And if you study private school history from about the 1920s to the 1970s, you will find many Amish, Catholic, many different groups who had to fight to start their own schools. They sacrificed. They went to jail
for the ability to have their own Christian schools. So go back and study that time. There was one instance in Oregon in 1925 where they had to fight back in that. The vision in the 1950s was to escape the public system because of the effect it was having on the students. And in the 1950s, by about 1955, there was over 40 Mennonite schools that were started. So now we see a transition away from the public school system to the Christian school movement. And that's only a couple of years ago. And the thing I find interesting is that the Christian schools were started as a way to get out of something bad. And I'm not sure. We've asked the question of, where do we want our children to become? Or who do we want them to become? Christian schools were started as a reaction to what the public school was offering. Again, not all bad. I think it was needed. So, that is what people have done. And now, today, we grapple with what's important. What are our students learning? What curriculum are we using? Where does the Bible play into the bigger picture of school? Our school has a significant impact on who our children are becoming. So, wow, that was fast. That covered thousands of years of what people have done in education. You will see, and my goal, I hope that you saw, that specific groups educated, trained to get a certain outcome. Did you see that theme coming through? So I posed this morning, what's coming out of our schools, our children? How are we training our children? And so now, as we wrap up our time, I want to quickly look at where we are. And as I share this, this is what I see in our schools as I look at the Christian schools generally. Some concern, some good. I see schools today as we view it as just nice. You see, our forefathers sacrificed a lot for these Christian schools, and we are in a place of prosperity. We have schools. It takes work to start a school. And now we have a lot of options around us. More so, maybe south of us. You might argue, like, oh, there's not much options here in Shenandoah. I understand that. But sometimes I see the Christian community, and again, I'm talking about the Christian community as a whole. Maybe Shenandoah is different. We're just viewing it as just nice and not as maybe essential as we should. I see acceptance of various types. As I look back in history, there was one option the community was focused on. Today, what do we got? We got patron-run school, we got church schools, we have online school, we have homeschooling, we have public school. There's many different options that families can choose. So it's no longer the church and the community choosing, it's the families choosing what's best for them. Again, this is what I see. I don't view these things as all wrong, but it's what I see. There's lots of options, and families choose as they wish. I see that the school is disconnected from the church. Way back then, Martin Luther said, it's important that the church cares deeply and has Christian schools. I see the schools and the churches becoming a little bit disconnected. And I don't know what that connection all looks like, but I think it's important that the churches care deeply about schools. Another thing I see is wealth creation is our focus. And the reason I say this is, the things I hear in school from students are, how's this going to help my job? Or I hear high schoolers saying, you know what, I can make more money if I drop out of school. It's not wrong to drop out of school, but I can make more money. I see a focus on wealth or on money more than education. I see family that's in crisis. And I say this, children in the first 7 years is the most influential time for later on in their life. Education doesn't start when they go to school. And I know you're well aware of that. Education starts at home. And I want to see our families care deeply about young children and invest there. Education training does not start when school starts, but rather when they are born. I see a tech crisis. So again, I'm looking at where are we? Where do I see schools, Christian schools today? I see a tech crisis. There's a lot of media around us that's affecting how we're learning and where we're focusing our time. Again, this is just what I see.
I also see economy. School isn't cheap. Tuition is not cheap. It's not. It's what I see. I don't know. I also see a postmodernism, and that is, I see a loss of integrity and values. What we say and what we do don't always match. I hear a lot of good things in church and families, and then I see what they actually do, and I scratch my head. Our children need to see what we say and what we do line up. Again, this is what I see in school. Now, that's what I see. Now, where can we go? And you will see, I care deeply about schools. I've invested a lot of time there. I'm passionate about it. So maybe you can write me off as being biased. But I hope, I trust that we can dig in and care about our children and where we want our schools to go. So, we saw what God said. We saw what people have done. I gave you a little glimpse into what I see. And now, where can we go? And this is where I think we can all get excited and passionate about training children. And we don't need to be teachers to do this. We need the community. Back to that, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes everybody investing in the next generation. And we're going to circle back to that at the end. I have a vision of educating with purpose to produce lovers of God rather than lovers of money. And when our children say, I can make more money doing this, say, or why am I learning this? As parents and teachers and adults, we can say, you know what, John? Is learning all about you? Or is it about how you can help somebody else? That's educating with purpose. That's what I see. That's what gets me excited. That's what gets me up in the morning, to produce lovers of God rather than lovers of money. I also see us viewing it as essential. It's not just nice that we have Christian schools, it's essential. And so we sacrifice deeply to making it happen and to allowing it to happen. Parents, what do your children hear you say about church, about school, about things of God? I'm finding that my girls catch on quick, and me and my wife can't talk around our children like we used to. I say that, parents, be careful. Or what, let me ask you this. What do your children hear you say? When they go to school, when they go to church, when they're out and about, what happens at home does come out. So, parents, what do your children hear you saying? View it as essential. I see career teachers. That's my vision. Career teachers. How do we get there? That's for you to answer. I don't have answers this morning. I just have thoughts. School leaders and teachers, I have asking the deep questions of what do we want for our children? How can we get to the end of producing lovers of God? Through our curriculum, through everything we do, how are we pointing them to be lovers of God? How does that look for the slow and the fast students? How do we phrase the importance of what we're learning in school? I see the church caring deeply about our schools. Did you ever sit down as parents and have a discussion about what you want your children to become? I think that's a valuable thing for a church to do. School is developing the future church. So here's my vision. School is a community effort that is equipping students to love God by serving others. That's my vision for school. That's why I'm here in it. So now, I'm still on where are we? Where to go? We talked a little bit about that, a vision. I think education and training in children is communicating to them that life is bigger than themselves. Education and learning, discipline. Yeah, when you have to discipline your child, what do you say the reason is you're disciplining? Well, they're disobeying, right? But why do you want them to grow up? So they can love God. Sometimes it's easy for me as a dad to discipline so my children act the way I want them to, so they don't, you know, humble me. That's easy to do as a dad. But we need to be communicating to our children, young people, that it's about love for God. So as I think about framing education and learning and discipling, learning to our children and our students, it's bigger than ourselves. Education is about how we can serve others more than it is about ourselves.
So this is what I want you to remember. Why school? Love God by serving others. And now I'm going to give you an action step. There's one more African proverb I want to share with you. Each one, teach one. There's an African village that deeply believed that once somebody learned something, they had the responsibility to train or teach somebody else. Do you know, brothers and sisters, this morning that real learning happens when you teach someone else? Did you ever try to teach someone else? So my action for you is we think about why school. Our church needs to care deeply about it. We saw what people have done. We saw where we are. I hope we have a picture of where we can go. But as we leave here, what are children hearing from us? And each one of us has a responsibility to train somebody else. Take somebody else. Does that mean we all need to be teachers? No, we can't all be teachers. So what does that look like? Well, maybe it means using your business to give money to a school so we can have career teachers. Maybe it means pulling a teacher aside and saying, hey, how are you? Check in with me every 2 months. I want to support you. Maybe it means taking our children aside and communicating to them that school is important. I leave you with this responsibility. How are you going to teach somebody else? I want you to answer that question. And remember this.
I think the most important thing is life. In life is that we love God by serving others. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, humbly we come before you. Thank you for what you've done for us on this Thanksgiving season. I pray that we could look for many things to be thankful for. And as this morning we looked at school, we talked about our children growing up. Oh, they're precious. And we want to invest well into their lives. And as we look at an important part of training, educating in school, may we surround or may behind all the math and the grammar and all the things we learn, may the sole foundation be that we are learning to love you. And as we learn with our children, go to school, as we learn at home, that our children could come away from what we teach them and say, wow, God is huge. I want to love him. And out of a love for him, may they want to serve you. That's where we want our children. That's where we want our children to end up. So I thank you for the church at Shenandoah. I pray that they would invest well into these 35 plus dear souls, the future generation. Thank you, dear God. May you continue to meet with us here this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.